I know Mike Johnson is going to tell us to slow our roll and that it was only one game, but let's bring him in anyways. Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst. MJ, we're going to start it off like this is Bills brunch and not Leafs lunch because the city's buzzing about that game yesterday. Everybody's talking about the NFL overtime rules after the game last night, obviously, major storyline. This one's kind of off the cuff, MJ, but if you had the power to change any one rule in any sport, what would it be?
In any sports? That's a wide-ranging question. But
if
I'll
there's a hockey,
hockey
one,
I'll
you,
stick to hockey.
Yeah.
If you score on the power play, you get to keep the power play. You got to get out of the box.
That's interesting.
2 minutes, he gets his 2 minutes, and he just doesn't got to come out. Same on 5-on-3s, as well as, now I'm going to get on a roll, I'm allowing hand passes in the offensive zone. I don't understand why we shade the rules. It's like, it's a subtle rule, but like, why do we let defensive players pass the puck with their hands, and then you're going to penalize offensive players? It makes no sense to me. So I'm allowing hand passes all over the ice.
I actually like that one. That's not something that I've heard come up quite a lot, but like that. That's
skill.
Well, it does, but I mean, it's realistically sometimes you're just kind of batting it down. It's not like you're grabbing the puck and throwing it over a player, over somebody's stick. Like, it's often just a quick bat down and away you go. It's no different than kind of knocking
it
down with your stick.
You know why you have to do it? Because the defense is holding your stick in his hand. Like, he's committing an infraction against you. He's like, yeah, if I want to pat it to my partner or whatever. And then you call a penalty if I put my hand on it and, like, toss it 15 feet in the air. Sure. But, let me play the puck with my hand the same way you're allowed to in defensive zone. I don't know why we wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting one. One that I've also kind of have been getting on board with is in 3-on-3 overtime, if you go back over the blue line, if you try and retreat and kind of circle back, losing possession
blue line
of the
becomes
puck.
The red line. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, lose possession?
Yeah. Well, it's just kind of like...
If you took the blue line out, right, and like once you're inside the blue line, then you could retreat to the red line and have some guy hanging out by the front of the net, like offer up more space. You wouldn't have to clear the zone once the one guy goes over top. There's a lot of little nuances there, but I will say this, and I got to tell you, like everybody, I'm buzzing still about the football games yesterday.
Yeah.
Just stop them. Like, you know, it's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not like, what, like,
it's true.
There is a defense, right? You just got to hold them.
What's that?
Not a touchdown. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah. Well, Josh Allen's really the only one in the world that's come out and said, realistically, you know, he said, well, that's the rule. If we would have gone out, won the toss, and scored, we'd be celebrating too. So, you know, he took that loss as well. He's not complained about the OT rules.
Interesting thought from a listener, AB, before we keep going. Should not be allowed to ice it on the penalty kill. Interesting one.
I like that. But you know what that just will do, though? It will just slow the game down because they'll ice it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So like, let's say you ice it, you can't change. When you're killing a penalty and you're under duress, you don't care. They're going to be back in your own end anyways. So I like
gassed,
the sentiment.
Right?
But you're just like, whatever, I'll ice it. We'll just take a face-off. It's all good. Like, in fact, you'd probably rather have a face-off and a chance to, you know, flip it out or whatever. So I like the idea, but I think that would just involve so many more whistles while killing penalties, which is kind of counterintuitive.
Why don't we throw that out onto the Twitter sphere, producer Steph? If there's a rule, if there's a rule in the NHL that you would like to see change, what would it be? And we can kind of bring out these responses throughout the duration of the show. In conversation with TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson, getting back to hockey, I guess. You know, the Leafs come out with a victory. They're able to hold on to that 3-1 lead, which has been a very daunting task as of late. But did you like the Leafs' response Saturday night after kind of being called soft and being called out by Sheldon Keefe on Wednesday?
Yes, of course I did. I mean, I thought they played really well. Mrazek was solid in net. Campbell a night off. They score when they have to. They find a way to win a kind of low event controlled game, something that Sheldon Keefe was probably looking for them. But I'm not surprised. Like, they're a good team. This is what they would do. I wasn't panicked when they gave up some leads. I'm not, you know, overjoyed that they did not. Like, they're a good team. More often than not, they'll be able to get that game over the finish line. So yes, it was a good response. And maybe the biggest development of it is if Mrazek's healthy and can work his way into Sheldon Keefe's confidence books to get the 60-40 split you were talking about earlier, AB. Like, I think that's what they want to do the rest of the way. That is probably the biggest development about that game.
Yeah.
A couple other thoughts. One, what did Carolina do? Carolina's, I think, the best team in the league. What did they do on the weekend? they gave up a 2-goal lead in the third period. Like, it happens to everybody.
Nobody talks about it. It's just because me and AB are here talking all day about the Leafs and their league.
To be fair, it happens. When it happens once, you don't really talk about it. But when it happens 4 times in a 5-game span, then it's worth talking about. That's kind of the difference there.
Yeah, but I'm saying it does happen all around. And also, did you see Sheldon Keefe kind of walk back?
Yes.
The soft comments. And so the analogy I offered up was like, it's like when you're chastising your kid and you can say, that was a dumb thing to do, which is very different than saying you're dumb. Like, you can say that we played a soft game in front of our own net, which is very different than we are a soft team and purposeless team. And I think Sheldon Keefe was making that distinction after the initial comment. He's like, listen, you know, I still believe in our team. We have to be better and harder in front of our own net. All things which are absolutely true, but very different than we are soft and purposeless team, not game or moment or situation, but team. And so I think he was softening its impact because I don't think he really believes that. It'd be bad if he did, and I don't think he should. But that, I did notice that, like, the interpretation, I think what he was trying to say was more specific to the game against the Rangers as opposed to an indictment of the entire team, and he kind of cleared that up a couple days later.
That's the way that I took it, though. Like, I didn't see it as a macro issue. I don't think he saw the team as soft. That's not how I took it. I did kind of look at it as a micro view, those comments, and figured that was about that game because, you know, traditionally they've been a pretty good, hard team to play against. But against that team, the forecheck really got in on them. Sandin, Liljegren, they really kind of got exposed in a bigger pair. Dermott especially also was kind of giving up a lot when he got pressured. But I thought that, right, so I thought that it was more so that game specifically. So I kind of knew, I didn't have that big of an issue with those comments.
So you were the one who got it right and everyone else got it wrong.
I guess so, apparently, that's the case.
Cleared
but when you look when you look at the game on Saturday, what did you make of the young guys who struggled a lot in that at those added minutes, you could say, against the Rangers, and then how did they kind of bounce back against the Islanders to you?
Well, I mean, I guess a little bit cleaner. I mean, the goals, it's amazing what goals against will do, though. Like, Mrazek stopped some pucks that maybe Campbell didn't stop the night before, so it looks a lot better. But I think they're a little bit cleaner. But I find, I think the die is cast for those young defensemen. I think, like, while they are great in their limited role, I think Sandin and Liljegren have absolutely crushed third pair responsibilities. You know, extended minutes against better players, you know, they do have the odd mistake. They do so many good things, but the odd big mistake does creep in their game. And, you know, maybe a bit of a cleaner game against the Islanders doesn't change that fact or change my opinion that that will be the case. Now, I wonder, AB, if they don't have, when's the deadline, March 19th or something like that, the trade deadline?
21st,
like,
I think.
21st, okay. So, like, don't they have, like, a two-month window here to prove how reliable they can be? Like, how aggressive does Kyle Dubas have to be with regards to getting more defensemen? Or can he, if everyone's healthy, feel pretty good about the 7-8 guys that they have in their rotation? And I think that's why Kyle is not going to overreact now. He's going to, like, listen, we got to figure out what we have here. Like, how good can these guys be now? And how good can they be in the future? But now it's probably a more pressing question. And we're not going to overreact to a couple bad games. We're not going to overreact to our coach getting angsty after a game. But we're just going to give him a couple months, give him a run here. Who knows how long Jake Muzzin will be out for? Hopefully not too long, but you never can tell. And just let them try to sort it out and see what they've got. I think there will be patience there because they want a longer evaluation in that enhanced role for all those guys, for Dermott, for Sandin, for Liljegren, for all of them.
We've got our TSN hockey analyst Mike Johnson on the phone. An update for listeners from Leafs practice. You brought up Jake Muzzin there. Muzzin is on the ice. He's wearing a red no-contact jersey. That'll be the first time that he's been on the ice since his concussion. Yeah.
I'm curious. Like we haven't talked about this very much this year, right? But the game when Muzzin was hurt.
Right.
So he got hit behind the net. He skated to the corner with his hands on his head. Then got the puck and threw it to, like, the weirdest place of all time. And then they scored a goal against him. And then he was not taken out by a concussion spotter.
Right?
And then
I was
a day later,
he
got a concussion. And I'm like, where? Like, we don't have this conversation very often anymore. We did maybe when the concussion spotter was a newer thing. But, like, I was having a text exchange with one of my buddies. I'm like, if there was ever an obvious concussion spotter moment, that would have been it, no? On the original hit. He's skating away with his hands in his head and then throws the puck and it completely, you know, place with no sense whatsoever, And he never was taken from the lineup. That was, I remember thinking that night, I'm like, that's not good. Like, that's the time when you're supposed to take guys out of the game to check.
Yeah, and he had a really tough night from then on.
Yeah, well, understandably, he had a concussion.
Totally, right. Yeah.
Wasn't the right mindset. That doesn't really get talked about nearly enough anymore. You're totally correct. But without Jake Muzzin, a guy who has kind of they've really relied on was Morgan Rielly, you know, and Morgan Riley's really starting to pick up his game. Really, it's been all season since he signed that deal. He's been unreal. He's on pace for 71 points this year. But stepping up, what improvements have you seen from Morgan Rielly this year for kind of the breakout season he's having, you know, as he kind of creeps up to that 30-year mark? Like, he's still progressing year after year, it seems, and this season it's all kind of getting put together.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had a great year a couple of years ago offensively, and I think what he's done is he has evolved in his game where, was it a couple of years ago, he had 70 points and 20-something goals, and he was very much all offense and, like, you know, not great defensively, but he was so good offensively, like, on balance, he was very much a positive player. And he used his legs a lot to generate that offense. I think you saw him really leading the rush, joining the rush, jumping on the attack a couple of years ago. And I think this year what he's done is he's just kind of settled it down where, you know, his offensive impacts this year, well, even though he's piling up points, are not as good as they were a couple of years ago. But his defensive metrics are much stronger. And so I think he's just kind of like calmed down his defensive game, allowed himself to pass the puck and use his teammates more effectively, and that has let him, you know, kind of play tons of minutes, be quite consistent, improve the defensive side of the game. Even if the offense metrics are down a little bit, they're still very solid. And then he's doing well in the power play as well, so he's picking up points there. So it's almost like as a guy matures in his age and his game changes a little bit, and he's very much under control of who he is and what he's trying to do, and you have to, and they need him to be. I mean, they've needed him to play, especially with Muzzin out. They need 25 minutes from Morgan Rielly. They need first pair responsibility from Brody and Rielly, and he's giving it to them.
Seriously, for all the things Kyle Dubas has to worry about this year, God bless Morgan Rielly, just holding it down back there. TJ Brody too. MJ, Keith Yandle, we'll start going around the league a little bit here, is going for history tonight. He could tie Doug Jarvis for the Ironman streak in the NHL. We were talking about this morning. Impressive feat. Keith Yandle, everybody knows he's just like a weapon of a guy. How impressive is it to do this during the whole COVID pandemic? Like, this guy's just insane.
Well, that's the running joke at this point. The last month, he's like no longer testing. Like, we're not going to let We're not going to let him get pulled because of COVID. I think the most games I ever played was maybe like 180 in a row or something like that. And it's just so, like, on a practical level, regardless of COVID, it is amazing to play that many minutes, that many games, never getting the flu, never getting a shot that breaks a bone in your foot, never pulling your groin where you can't see, never your back tightening up, or having those things happen and then just playing through it and being, you know, being able to manage your body that well. It's incredible, and it should be celebrated. It probably hasn't been this year enough because the Flyers have been terrible. And I think that Phil Kessel's right behind him as well, and Phil Kessel might end up having the record when it's all said and done anyways. But as beloved a teammate as you can find, like, across the league, anyone who knows Keith Yandle, has played with Keith Yandle, has been around him, knows that he is one of the best people in the game. Like, guys just love having him as a teammate. So congratulations to him. And the fact, like, and I didn't want to put it out there in the world, like, I didn't want to put that juju out there, but, like, you know, coming up the last month, and there's absolutely nothing stopping him from catching COVID and having this end. Like, it's been 13 years in the making, and he just, you know, for whatever reason, some random reason, it's bouncing around their team. He was able to avoid it. So good for him. And it's good tonight, the tie-in game. Tomorrow night, the breaking game. So let's get it over with quickly, back-to-back. And to think how many times it was probably pretty close to ending, including last year where he was supposed to get scratched.
Right,
by the Panthers. Like, he was told, you're not playing, and it was his teammates, going back to what a teammate he is, it was his teammates who went to the coach, Joel Quenneville, then said, nope, we're not having it. This guy, he's not ending it this way. We're not scratching him game one. No chance. He's playing. He scored a goal that game, went out, played every game the rest of the year. But, I mean, he probably had several moments throughout this run that it was close to ending, and Hopefully I'll culminate for him tonight, tomorrow night. It's incredible stuff. It's a league record. Not many of those kicking around.
Yeah, full Rudy Rudiger. Just going into the coach's room being like, no, that's not happening. Putting the jerseys on the ground.
Lay down the jerseys. Oh, yeah.
Lay down the jerseys. No, Yandle's playing that game.
Cheers me up every time, still.
Oh, love it. Absolutely love it. One of the great, great movies of all time. All right, MJ, we're going to have to leave it there. But great chat as always. We'll chat again next week.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Take it out. Take it easy. There he goes. MJ, Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst.